Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, September the 22nd, 2016. We are now into fall, the fall of 2016, although it doesn't feel that way here in Ohio today. 88 degrees, can you believe that? But the cooler weather is marching in and should be here about the time the weekend starts on Saturday. I think a high of 77 on Saturday. 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Scott Spears, your host, and we are going to have a great program today. Let me fill you in really quick on who's coming up in hour number two today. It is approaching, we are approaching the end of baseball season, and we could not have a better guest in hour number two today. 1:15 to 2 p.m., we're going to be joined by Julia Ruth Stevens. Julia Ruth Stevens is the daughter of Babe Ruth, and she is 100 years old. We'll see if she thinks the Cubbies are going to make it to the World Series today and break that 108-year losing streak. Boy, we hope that'll happen this year. That would be tremendous. Coming up in the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined by Brian Haviland, who's the president and CEO of Fraser Hybe, who conducted a study here in Marion, Ohio, and he's going to give us the results of that for the first time anywhere. He just gave a speech. He's coming directly from that speech, and at 12:30, he will be here in studio to reveal those results for the media, for the listening audience, here at 12:30. You won't want to miss that either. And you won't want to miss our first guest because he is a spokesperson for the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign. He is Christopher Huntley. Chris, how are you?
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Scott. We're doing all right. How are you?
Good to hear from you. So glad that we were able to get you on today because we had a lot of questions in the last few days regarding Secretary Clinton and being a spokesperson for her campaign. Can you kind of fill us in on what your job is?
Yeah, so here on the campaign, my role is the director of Millennial Media. So my primary focus is to bring the Secretary's message and her commitment and her values to millennials. And millennials are defined as young people ranging from the ages of 18 to 35. And so, as you can imagine, that's a wide swath of young folks. And so we're speaking directly to the generation, taking into account the diversity of the generation. That's everyone from students in college to young parents and young professionals. So every day we're working hard to, you know, lay out the stakes for this election for the generation and to continue to show that Secretary Clinton has the track record that it will help to create a brighter future for millennials.
Why is Secretary Clinton so far behind with millennials?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's it's clear that we have work to do, and we are committed to earning the vote of every young voter, but you know, there are concerns that young people do have, and like Secretary Clinton said on Monday, this is a race that is in very much every sense a battle for the soul of our country. And Secretary Clinton is the only candidate in this race that has a plan to, you know, lift up the generation and bring and put the generation forward. And I think the challenge that we have is that there are tons of young people who don't know all the many things that Secretary Clinton has done throughout her career, right? There's over 30 years of a career that the Secretary has, and in that time there's been tons of negativity thrown at her, and sometimes that can seem to stick. But our job has been to bring her historic and her longtime commitment to fighting to bring everyday families and everyday Americans ahead to the forefront. And so to us that looks like, you know, meeting young people where they're at, letting them know about her record, fighting for children and families at the Children's Defense Fund, what she did as First Lady, what she did as a senator from New York, and how she represented our country abroad. So it's a challenge that we understand and we welcome, and we, you know, here we like our chances. We know that this race is going to be a close race, but we believe that in the end, young people will stand with Secretary Clinton because she'll create a brighter future with the generation on all the issues that we care about.
Can you get the millennials in 47 days, though? Not a whole lot of time, and she's lost ground since August with them.
Yes, again, you know, we are committed to earning every vote, so that means every day we are out on the road. Last week and, you know, the week before, you saw that we had, you know, top-level surrogates, you know, communicating Secretary Clinton's message. That's everyone from President Obama to Senator Sanders out encouraging young people to, like, First Lady Michelle Obama said not to get too tired or turned off in this election because the stakes are too high. And then you saw Secretary Clinton on Monday really make the case to millennials, letting them know, and to young people, letting them know that their vote matters and that if we are going to build on the progress that President Obama, that we've seen under President Obama in the last 8 years, we have to get, we have to be committed to vote and we have to stand for the issues that we care about. And standing for the issues that we care about means voting up and down the ballot for those issues. And Secretary Clinton is the embodiment of those values that young people care about. So yes, I do think that we will, in the end, bring out the young vote for Secretary Clinton.
A topic of discussion from callers here at the station this week has been the Second Amendment. Now, we did read yesterday Secretary Clinton's plan as far as gun control went. We read the four issues in that plan. And we also played Donald Trump's quote about she wants to take away all your guns. Now, a caller called in and said that he wants to hear her say that she believes in the Second Amendment and she believes that everybody has a right to carry a firearm in the United States. Is that something? Now, he agreed with her plan, but he said he wanted her to believe in the Second Amendment that every law-abiding citizen has a right to carry a firearm. Is that something she would say if she was here today?
So I think this is a symptom of what we've been seeing in this race is a lot of distractions, a lot of statements, both from Donald Trump and those on the Republican side overblowing certain details. But yes, Secretary Clinton does believe in the Second Amendment, but she does also believe that we have to reform the system to reduce the violence that we're currently seeing, violence like that is, that we are seeing too much of. And so I think that that's where she stands on the issue. But there's every day there's something that's overblown by the Republican side. But our job here is to clearly state where Secretary Clinton stands and to let folks know that to not be distracted by different spin on different issues, but be focused about what's really at stake in this election.
So from the campaign itself, from a spokesperson, you're saying that Secretary Clinton does believe in the Second Amendment and that if you're a law-abiding citizen, under her plan, you have the right to carry a gun.
Secretary Clinton believes in the Second Amendment.
Okay. We'll move on from there. I saw a new NBC poll, a SurveyMonkey poll this morning. 41% of people in this country trust Donald Trump. 31% trust Secretary Clinton. Why is that?
So again, like I said, there has been a long history of attacks against Secretary Clinton, but I think by and large, when you look at the issues, when you look at where the Secretary stands on everything from criminal justice reform to the environmental justice to health care to immigration reform, Secretary Clinton has a long track record of being consistent on the issues of getting progress there. So I think that folks will ultimately see that she is the candidate in this election that will follow through on her word, and she has a long track record of doing that. So we understand that there are some challenges that we face in terms of folks with the Secretary, but we are committed to laying out the clear stakes in this election. And what we have in this election is, Donald Trump is a person who does not even have any sense of reality when it comes to any of the issues. His plans change every single day. Just along in this race, we have seen him switch and flip and flop on every turn. And no matter what happens, what we know is that Donald Trump is a person that cannot be trusted. And here's the reason why. Maya Angelou said that when someone shows you who they are, you have to believe them. And Donald Trump, on issue after issue, has shown that he is not consistent with where the American public stands on our values and what we believe will get us ahead. So I think that, again, we understand that there is a challenge and that there are some concerns, but we are committed to bringing out the message to young voters and bringing out the message to all voters that Secretary Clinton has a long track record of following through on her word. And like she said, at the NHJ conference last month, she told young voters, particularly young voters of color and young journalists, to look, that she would like for everyone to be engaged in this process. And if elected, she wants them to keep her accountable. And so I think that, like she said on Monday in her speech, we can all take for this election, what we have to do is we have to look at the facts of where they stand, and we have to make a decision based on who we know has a track record of fighting for the American people. And in that election, there's a clear choice to Secretary Clinton.
You said Donald Trump is a person that cannot be trusted. 47 days away right now, if you read the polls, he's trusted by 10% more of the American people than Secretary Clinton.
But again, like I said, the challenge here is letting the American people know that who Donald Trump is and what he stands for. This is a man that doesn't believe in climate change. This is a man that does not think that we need to raise the minimum wage. And these are issues that are at the heart of, especially young people, that they care about. And Donald Trump has no consistency on those issues. He has no history on those issues. And so I think that what we'll see in the election is a clear contrast, and the American people will ultimately see that Secretary Clinton is the only choice in this election to keep moving our country forward.
If that is true, if everything you say about Donald Trump is true, why is it a close race? Why is it going to be a close race?
Well, look, we have always said from the very beginning the campaign has said that we understand this will be a close race. You know, we understand that, and we're committed to fighting for every single vote. We are asking Americans, young Americans, to give us a chance to look and look at the issues where both candidates stand, right? And so in doing that, we know that we have a case to make to voters, and we're not taking anything for granted. We know that there are some concerns out there, but that's why we are on the trail. That's why we are in every state fighting for Secretary Clinton, and that's why we are clearly laying out the contrast that exists between the Republican Party and Democrats up and down the ballot, because we know that this election is going to be tight. But what we're saying to folks is that we need young voters, we need voters to get out, be registered, go to iwillvote.com, and make your voice heard in this election, because at the end of the day, we are going to choose whether or not we're going to go with love or we're going to go with hate. We're going to choose whether we're going to stand with a candidate that divides our country or stand with someone that has a track record of bringing us together and moving us forward. The stakes in this election are too high. Who the president is matters. It matters for our community, it matters for our families, it matters for our country, and we cannot afford to allow distractions and overblown statements to cloud decisions when it comes to this election, because the soul of the country is at stake. And here at the campaign, we're doing that both in headquarters, we're doing it all throughout the states, and we are committed to earning every single vote. And we understand there are concerns, but we're committed, and we believe and we're confident that at the end of the day, on November 8th, we will have the American people on our side.
90 seconds left to go. I'm going to throw you a long ball here. 47 days till the election, but 5 days till the debate. They say this debate's going to be watched by more people than the Super Bowl. It's going to be covered by almost every major news channel and network channel on television. Can she come out looking good in this debate with a guy who has no rules?
You know, Secretary Clinton is preparing for the debate, and like you said, it's going to be one of the most widely viewed events on television that we've seen in modern history. And I think that you know, she is preparing for it. We don't know which Donald Trump is going to show up, right? We don't know whether or not he's going to come cool, calm, and collected, or come ready to rumble or what have you. But what we are confident on is that Secretary Clinton has a plan. If there is an issue, she has a plan for it. And the challenge is clearly communicating those plans, and I think that she has a long history of doing that, and just holding Donald Trump accountable for what he may say that's not true, which we know he can't seem to get a grasp or hold on the truth for his life's sake. So, you know, I think that Secretary Clinton is more than prepared. She will be prepared to come out and to make her case to the American people that she is the candidate in this race with plans, with an actual track record, and who has the integrity and the commitment to fight for the American people.
Christopher Huntley, an official spokesperson for the Hillary Clinton campaign. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye. And we are going to take a momentary break, 1 minute, and come back with Brian Haviland, president and CEO of the Fraser Hybe Group. And we're going to hear some very interesting things. Also, don't forget, 1:15 today, Julia Ruth Stevens, the 100-year-old daughter of Babe Ruth. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 12:10 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean? Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I'd never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
And Scott Spears back with you here, 31 minutes past the hour. Just a little reminder, don't forget Julia Ruth Stevens next hour, 100-year-old daughter of Babe Ruth, and hopefully she's going to be a Cubs fan today as we head into the World Series in late October as they look like they've got a chance. But our guest today, here for the last half hour, in the first hour, is somebody we've been waiting to hear from, Brian Haviland, President and CEO of the Fraser Hybe Group, to share some results of research and some recommendations for Marion that he's come up with. We're kind of all going to learn about this together here. So, Brian, you're a native Marionite.
Right, I grew up here.
Yeah.
Right on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Is that right? What's the biggest change since you lived here?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that we uncovered in our research because I grew up here. I graduated from Harding in 77. I went to school in Athens and, of course, frequently visited here afterwards with parents and family being in town. But one of the things that we found in the research is really not as much has changed as in some areas as some people think. For example, I would have thought that Marion would have decreased in population when a number of large employers left town in the late 70s, early 80s. But remarkably, Marion and Marion County have remained pretty constant population-wise over these last several decades since I lived here. And there were a number of other findings from our study that really informed for the Marion Can-Do organization as well as for the Marion Community Foundation some new compelling claims that Marion should be making in order to put it in the best position to attract employers in the future.
And what are those claims?
What we recommended after all of our homework was that Marion embrace a claim around America's workforce development capital. And the rationale behind that, Scott, is that when you look at Marion's manufacturing heritage, it's really remarkable what Marion has been able to accomplish in the manufacturing sector. Manufacturing, a lot of people think, is yesterday's news, and that our so-called service economy is what we're about today. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are on the verge of a fourth manufacturing revolution, the first three being the invention of the steam engine, Henry Ford's mass production line, and then more recently in the 1970s, automation. And what we found in our research is that all of those major spikes in manufacturing revolutionary techniques also triggered spikes in our gross domestic product, not just as a country, but globally. And so what happens is you go through a revolutionary spike, and then you'll see the GDP begin to gradually tail off until the next revolution. Well, it's been decades now since our last real revolution in this country around automation. And what happened after that? A lot of manufacturers took jobs overseas. They started building plants in China, in Mexico, in other areas of the world where there were lower labor costs, and there were other advantages they felt that they could produce products as inexpensively as possible using automation techniques. In addition, you saw these same manufacturers moving plants as close to markets as they could. So these are just minor tweaks to a basic revolution around automation. We are now on the verge of a fourth manufacturing revolution. It's all about smart manufacturing. It's all about the use of robotics. It's the use of virtual reality technology. It's big data. It's the ability to really boost productivity in new ways. It's really exciting. And Marion, given its heritage and given its incredible educational assets combined, really has the ability to position itself in the marketplace with professional site selection consultants, with prospective employers, and with those who can help tell this story as America's workforce development capital. There's already examples with Union Tank Car where Marion Candu partnered with a number of resources, government and through our education corridor, to provide the very specific type of welding training that Union Tank Car required to make that final commitment to move those jobs into our community. It's that kind of collaboration, it's that kind of partnership that's essential for communities to be successful. And Marion is uniquely positioned. There's no other community Marion's size, 65,000 in the county, that has a Ramtech, a Tri-Rivers, a Marion Technical College, an OSU branch, not to mention an innovative public school program called Pathways that's all about introducing our kids to technical education in the ninth grade and allowing kids to choose a technical field that they can become certified in by the time they graduate their senior year in high school. It's a wonderful program. It's uniquely Marion, and Marion needs to build on this foundation that it has, both in manufacturing and in education, to position itself competitively in this very competitive world of economic development.
Marion Tech, OSU Marion, Tri-Rivers have all been here for a long time. Ramtech's a new part of Tri-Rivers within the last 5 years. But why hasn't that happened? I think they've all been here, you know, at least since the 80s, those three organizations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't speak to the past. I can only speak to our assignment that we were given. And I had the opportunity, at the invitation of Marion Candu last December, to speak to a group of business leaders about the importance of marketing to a specific vision. It was a little bit of marketing 101, but it had an economic development flavor to it. I had the opportunity to take a kind of a stroll down memory lane, some old photographs of Marion, just how far Marion's come over all these decades. And the point of my presentation was around the benefits of a focused marketing effort at the community level. And it was based on a book called Town Inc., authored by Andrew Davis, in which he surveyed communities throughout America who had done the best job of not only promoting themselves, but of reaping the benefits of that promotion. And in my presentation, I used one of the examples that Davis used in his book from DePue, Indiana, a small community, 15,000 to 20,000 in northern Indiana, built around being an orthopedics capital and owning that position from a marketing standpoint, from a program standpoint, from a workforce development standpoint, just owning orthopedics. I believe a third of the largest orthopedics companies in the world are headquartered in Little DePue, Indiana. So Marion, the challenge for our assignment was to find something that Marion could truly make as a compelling claim. And what qualifies as a compelling claim is a claim that is unique, a claim that is relevant, a claim that is believable, and a claim that is lasting. And if you don't have those four things, then it's really hard to hang your hat on a compelling claim. And what we told Marion can do, and our work was also funded by the Marion Community Foundation, was that for most clients, we have options. We present our client with options. We're a marketing firm. So a lot of times there's an art and a science to our work. And we like to present our clients with options. And then that, what they usually do is gravitate towards one of those options, and then we build out that option for them. In this case, Scott, we said that we had no options for this assignment, that this recommendation was plan A, and that there was no plan B, that there was no other compelling claim that we could come up with for Marion that made the most sense and that passed all of those criteria as Marion, as America's workforce development capital.
And why is that? Why is there only one plan?
Because when you take a look at all of Marion's assets and you look at what could make a compelling claim to somebody who is responsible for siting their next operation somewhere in America, when we looked at that, we only saw the manufacturing and educational assets of Marion playing into that decision-making process.
Why? It's a weird thing because perception's an odd thing. And there are so many good things going on in Marion. And I think most people know about them. I'd like to think most people know about them. But you do hear a lot about the bad things. How do you get away from that?
Well, I'm glad you raised that point, Scott, because in our interviews, we did hear, you know, some pockets of negativity, and there seemed to be a, you know, almost a "we're our own worst enemy" kind of thought process, even among some leadership in Marion. And to get away from that kind of thinking takes a new game plan, and that's what we tried to present today: was a new game plan for Marion Economic Development built around workforce development. Because workforce development has been, and will be for the foreseeable future the number one factor driving location decisions in this country. And so when you go to the professional site selector community and you're trying to promote your location versus someone else's, if you can fulfill the workforce development box, if you can have a check mark there that the community is prepared, willing, able to support a viable workforce for that company, then you are light years ahead of your competition. And that's the real opportunity that Marion has. But we also presented, because it's really important that the community believe in Marion. And I would challenge the premise that most Marionites know all the good things that go on in Marion. The reason I challenge that is because I used to be a Marionite, and Whirlpool was here when I lived here. Whirlpool's been a great corporate citizen for Marion over 50-plus years, and I had no idea that 18,000 dryers a day were made in Marion. My staff couldn't believe that. You know, we're right in Columbus, nearby Columbus. My staff isn't great at math. They're better with words. But they did the simple calculation, and it came out to between 4 and 5 million dryers a year in Marion, Ohio, coming out of our plant here, the Whirlpool plant. It's fascinating. And of course, there's WB Lox. There's ArcelorMittal. There's ethanol production. There's all kinds of goods being produced in Marion that we don't think most Marionites would really stop and think about and give credit to Marion for. And it goes beyond that. Marion, more than just its manufacturing capabilities, is just rich in societal contributions as a community with 35,000 people. I mean, it's amazing when you look at performers who used to perform at the Palace Theater who are now performing off-Broadway. When you look at some of the historical figures in Marion, you know, everyone likes to talk about Warren G. Harding, but, you know, not as many people talk about Edward Huber. And there are so many great stories that emanate from Marion right up to today. People don't know about Doug Sharp being an Olympic bobsled competitor on Team USA, hailing from this area, or Huey Lewis in the news, hailing from this area.
Mary Ellen Withrow, who lives
Mary
here
Ellen
currently.
Mary Ellen Withrow, she was in my presentation today as an example. O.J. McDuffie.
Absolutely.
A fantastic receiver for the Miami Dolphins and for the Penn State Nittany Lions, being born right here in Marion. So there are many things, and you know, it doesn't have to be celebrity either. There are many examples of fantastic work being done by individuals from Marion. You know, the B.J. Gruber piece that was in the Columbus Dispatch yesterday regarding how the Marion Police Force is taking a new look at how it solves some of our drug-related issues. It was about solutions. It wasn't about the problem. You know, I would say B.J. Gruber is Marion made. Quentin McKee, who was an 11-year-old who decided to take on mowing lawns for the elderly and for the disabled in town. You know, little Quentin, 11 years old, what an example. He's Marion made. There are so many examples of Marion made, both on the celebrity side and on just the everyday achievement side, that's worth recognition. And when you put this all together, you have a powerful community campaign that people can really relate to, maybe learn something from. Can you believe that? Maybe learn something from it and truly take pride in the community. And so we talked about Marion Made on blankets for babies that are born at Marion General. We talked about Marion Made on hats, on T-shirts, Marion Made decals on retail storefronts. Marion Made so that when a company like Nucor wants to celebrate 100 years in Marion and wants to buy its own billboard to do that, which is great, by the way, that they do that, why not slap a Marion Made logo on that as well? It doesn't cost any additional money to do that, and it's another way for companies and organizations to really show their pride in being a part of Marion.
You know, it's interesting. That's a fantastic idea. But why? You're exactly right. I think the premise is that a lot of people don't know about the good things going on in Marion. I believe that. But why is it, and how do you change the perception of... they were just talking this morning on the news about a building downtown. A burned-out building that's been there for 3 years that nobody's torn down, that businesses aren't going to downtown Marion, that obviously the big word is heroin, a sheriff's race is being run by one campaign all on the heroin issue. How do you get away from all that?
Well, I don't know if you ever get away from it. I think all you can do is control your own message. And I think leadership in this community, you have a real blend now in Marion of some more experienced leadership along with some new blood. And it's a really healthy mix of leadership in Marion that does see a new direction for Marion, a positive direction for Marion. But what it was lacking was a game plan. It was lacking a message. And so, you know, to the extent that my firm was able to come in, do some homework, develop a rationale for a truly positive message, both in terms of attracting business to Marion and in terms of building pride and education in Marion. You know, I'm proud that we were able to do that because it's not often that a consultant can come back to his hometown and speak to issues in their field. And so to be able to do that for my hometown was a real honor, and it's been a real privilege to do that.
It's interesting because I don't know how we got this way, because it wasn't always this way.
No.
There was a positive feeling here.
Yes.
Only 44 cities in the world, counties, had a president come from there.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really mention that a whole lot. It's just kind of over there. People know where the Harding Memorial is.
And how about this, Scott, as we presented this today, too? How about 1938, Miss America?
Miss Marilyn Meskey.
Right.
I would bet you.
How many communities have both a former president and a former Miss America?
Absolutely.
I think you're going to take that 44 right down to maybe one.
And I would bet you 20% of the people in the town have not been to the Harding home.
There's another opportunity, right?
Now you would think, yeah.
It's another opportunity. And it's not just for Marion, but think about the people who pass through Marion, pass by Marion on US 23, come to Marion for various events, activities, family, maybe it's a ball game. When you have a campaign that educates around the real achievements and contributions to society that Marion companies and individuals have made, it's not only good for building community pride, but it's also great to educate others. Wow, I didn't know that, you know, Marion was home, Marion County was home to Jim Thorpe, you know, or
John Dean at one point.
Or John Dean, or one of the first NFL franchises, the Les Rue Indians. There's just a wealth of information and did you know kinds of stuff that are uniquely Marion. And I say uniquely Marion because I think you'd be hard-pressed to find as many examples of societal achievement in any other community of Marion's size in the region that Marion has had. When you look at Marion Power Shovel, when you look at its contributions to building the Panama Canal, to moving the space shuttle to the launch pad, when you look at so many individuals from Marion who have made major contributions in their chosen fields, one of our recommendations today, and it's not right out of the box, but one of the things that we would like to see the community do in the future is reach out to former Marionites, people who had have grown up here. Maybe they've lost touch with the community because they've moved on in their careers to other places, but they still have a passion for their hometown. I believe everybody wants their hometown to be a place, a source of pride, a source of good news. And it's important, I think, at the appropriate time for Marion to reach out to former Marionites like myself. I'm a perfect example. And people who have had relatively successful careers in their chosen fields and who can come back to Marion and share with kids, share in classrooms, maybe share in some type of advisory capacity, help Marion help itself. It's a great way to take somebody who only hears the bad things about Marion that have been out there in the media around crime and drugs and to educate them about the direction that Marion is now taking and to get them excited about it and, more importantly, get them involved.
You know something I've noticed? When I cite things, because a lot of it is history, without question, but when I cite things and say, okay, well, what's happened lately? And I always cite Ramtech and the dorms, the college dorms for Ohio State. Drive down 95, and you're, but you know, very little talk. Ramtech gets talk, which I'm glad. The dorms, I really don't hear people talking about that, and they're building more of them over there because more people are coming in. But what do we hear talk about? We talk a lot about downtown Marion. We talk about there's a revitalization project that's been going on there for 10 years at least that isn't really fulfilling. Is it plausible to revitalize downtown Marion as a commerce area?
Well, I'm probably not qualified to address that question, Scott, being a marketing professional. I think that does take some economic development and planning expertise. But what I would like to touch on, if you would allow, is the millennial audience and the millennial mindset, which I think is extremely important. I heard a human resources consultant recently talk about millennials and their work styles. And this all relates to Marion's positioning, so if you'll bear with me. She mentioned that, you know, she was talking to a lot of baby boomers in the room, and myself included. I have three adult children. And she said, you know, millennials are the boomers' fault. And she's absolutely correct. The millennial mindset is the boomers' fault. And I related this in the presentation today back to manufacturing. What is a baby boomer's perception of manufacturing? I showed a number of black and white photos of dirty, dingy manufacturing environments, unsafe, low-paying, unskilled workers. And I contrasted that with the reality of this fourth industrial revolution and the type of manufacturing that's taking place today and the kind of education that when you go through a Marion Technical College or an Albert Center or Ramtech, you get today. It's around advanced manufacturing. It's around smart manufacturing. It's around robotics. It's around precision welding. It is not your mother or father's manufacturing environment. We were all told as baby boomers, put your kids through college. Give them a four-year traditional college education and everything will be okay. That's what we were told. What did we find? We followed all of the prescription and we found out the other end that many of our young people come out of that four-year traditional college education with no job or not the job they were expecting and a lot of debt. And instead, we have this skills gap in our country. 50% of U.S. manufacturers cannot find the skilled, qualified workers they're looking for. 50%. The World Economic Forum says that right now, Scott, there are 10 million manufacturing jobs, this is globally, that are currently unfilled for lack of being able to find the skilled workforce. So when you look at an opportunity for Marion to capitalize on its unique heritage, its educational institutions that are right here in a very condensed space, and the individual and company societal achievements that emanate from this community, you've got a fantastic story to tell. I'd like to think that someday we will be able to look in a USA Today or on a major newscast and see Marion profiled as a community that once had everything and then felt like the economic rug got pulled out from under it and whose leaders then recovered around a solid game plan and commitment to position Marion for economic success. And when you have economic success, everything else falls out of that. So I would even say that as you look at smart manufacturing jobs and have that be a focus for Marion and its workforce development efforts, that's not to the exclusion of other opportunities. There are opportunities in healthcare technology and a number of others. But when you do that and you do that well, it's going to have a ripple effect in terms of making Marion more attractive, maybe solving to that downtown development issue that you mentioned earlier.
With 60 seconds left, fascinating conversation. You mentioned leadership, and somebody does make the decisions in the end. Do we have the right leadership?
Well, I think you have the right leadership. I mean, every leader that we were able to talk to, were very supportive of this effort. And that goes from the mayor to county commissioners to council people who were at the presentation today, to your business leaders in the community, and you know, last and not least, the educational leaders in the community. Everyone's been supportive. This is not going to be easy to pull off. It's going to take true collaboration. It's going to take a willingness and a commitment to really hone Marion's message around being the workforce development capital and lifting people up in Marion. around this pride campaign that we're calling Marion Made.
Brian Haviland has been the guest, and guess what? Marion Made. There you go. We'll be back in about 15 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
The 2016 Republican National Convention.
Good morning, we're on the air.
Hey, Charlie, it's Scott.
Scott! Oh, wow! Okay, we've been wanting to hear from you, Scott.
Well, I tell you, this morning I did something different. Yesterday we were outside with the protesters, so today I made sure we got here a little earlier.
Uh-huh.
Got through the checkpoints, and I am actually calling you from Cleveland, Ohio, Republican National Convention, inside. I am sitting right now inside the Quicken Loans Arena, looking at the Oregon delegation from the rafters.
No kidding, you're among the seats.
I am in.